awfully lucky congregation, aren't we? Thank you so much, Michael. Did everyone get a chance to take the brief science test found in today's bulletin? Let's review it together, class. How long does it take the Earth to revolve around the sun?
365 1/4 days.
All right, man. To be precise. Did humans and dinosaurs exist on the Earth at the same time? Amen. Approximately what percentage of the Earth's surface is water?
75.
Yeah, all right. So from a recent survey of American adults taken by the California Academy of Sciences, only 53% of adults know how long it takes for the Earth to revolve around the sun. Only 59% of adults know that the earliest humans and dinosaurs did not exist at the same time. And only 47% of adults can roughly approximate the percentage of the Earth's surface that is covered with water. 47% got between 65 and 75%. Only 14% got the better answer of about 70%. So roughly 70%. Only 21%, 21 out of 100 adults answered all three questions correctly. They're not tough questions. There is a well-organized war on science that is taking place in America. It's part of our larger culture wars. We like wars on things, don't we? We're told there's a war on Christmas. There's our endless and racist drug war. And what about all this news now about a war on religion? Yes, right here in America, there is a war on religion. Do any of you sitting in this beautiful room this morning feel anything other than peace and joy and maybe some curiosity is what I'm getting at? Do any of you feel threatened right at the moment? No, because this imaginary war on religion has more to do with religious abuse than anything we do at our worship on Sunday mornings. More on that later. Let's get back to our war on science. The troops are ready to commence firing. Now, we Americans have always been a little funny about our education and our education systems. We want you to know stuff, but not too much stuff. Not so much where you start to make us feel uncomfortable because we don't know as much stuff as you know. And we don't want you too dumb either. There should be this nice middle ground between dumb as toast and highfalutin college grad. All right, I'm exaggerating, but I think you see my point. As a society, America, we've kind of had this give and take with education. Well, in the past 30 years, this has greatly changed. Greatly changed. We have decreased funding of our public schools and universities, and we have, as a society, begun to place less value on education and science as a matter of public policy, and we are beginning to pay the price. We consistently lag behind other nations in benchmarks of scientific knowledge. And when other nations used to send their best and brightest to America to receive what used to be a top-notch scientific education, well, there are other nations doing a better job at that than the country that once got man on the moon. How did this happen? Let's go out on a limb here. There's an apple. It falls to the ground. This cause and effect situation made a man long ago, Isaac Newton, begin to think about some stuff. Now, whether or not this story is true really doesn't apply in this sermon. This is a familiar tale, and it should immediately make most of us think of some of Newton's propositions and theories. Whether there was an actual apple up in the tree is up for debate. But it's a familiar tale, and it works for our story this morning. Out on a limb. So back to Newton. He thought to himself, did the apple and the ground have some strange attraction that caused them to join together? They did, and they do. It's called gravity, and we all have it. Anything with mass has gravity and actually exerts its pull upon things in its neighborhood. In fact, the Earth actually moves up an imperceptible bit to meet your foot as you walk. Your mass has gravity, just not as much as the Earth's. So here's a question for you. Where's the outrage? Where's the war on the theory of gravity? Well, it's just a theory. It's never really been proven. There are holes in the science. It's a liberal plot to undermine God. Okay, so about 10 years ago, I was teaching a basic anatomy and physiology course to nursing students at the Wichita Area Technical College. I've been doing this off and on for a number of years. It's a passion of mine. I love how our bodies work, how they heal, how they decay, all the good stuff of knowing the science of anatomy and physiology. So on this particular day, it had snowed, and the college snow removal team had yet to get to campus, and I knew I had students showing up for class very soon, so I took matters into my own hands. I found a snow shovel, and I began working on the steps. What I didn't know is that black ice had formed under the snow first. I went down right on my tailbone, hard enough that I was unable to get up without help. So the college sent me to their occupational doctor for an x-ray and a checkup. The physician who examined me found out that I was teaching anatomy to nurses, and he paused. And he actually asked me, now mind you, this is a physician, an MD, someone we hope understands how science works. He asked me if I believed in evolution. I think his exact words were, you don't believe in that evolution stuff, do you? To say that I was stunned is an understatement. Do I believe in evolution? No. I don't believe in science. I trust in science. Pardon me. It's my new tie clip. I don't believe in science. I trust. I trust in science. Even autophonic science. I trust in science to get it right. I trust in science to explain the natural world. Science is self-correcting. I don't worship science, I trust science. When something is discovered that corrects a previous finding, the science is changed to reflect the new understanding. And besides, as I replied to this physician, have you ever really looked at the human knee? If there is some great power that designed that, I question their engineering skills. Now, I know I'm going out on a limb here, but the human knee is just one of the many examples of things in our bodies that does not allow for intelligent design in my theology. Now, do I think there is something else going on here? Yes. Yes, I do, and I will get to that in just a minute. But this is important. Evolution isn't just some theory that can be easily disproved. I think the general public has confused the idea of a scientific theory with just an idea of mine that I've been kicking around so it's open for debate. The scientific theory of evolution is a well-established piece of our scientific knowledge. Did you know that Charles Darwin was a deeply pious Christian who delayed the release of his book on the origin of species for as long as he could because he knew the science that he had uncovered, the science that had been revealed to him, was going to shake up the religious authorities of his day. And it did. And it does. It still irks the religious authorities of our day. The science of evolution is not in doubt. There are plenty of people who think that there are plenty of holes, but the reality is the science is not in doubt. In fact, it is a foundational piece of all of the biological and natural sciences, and it is not in question except by people whose religious views cannot coexist with the natural world, except by people who feel that for some reason, to understand how the natural world functions is a threat to their religion and their belief in God. I question a faith that can be threatened by the real world. But that's my thing. Okay, it's a few other people's thing too. The Dalai Lama has stated, "If scientific analysis were conclusively to demonstrate certain claims in Buddhism to be false, then we must accept the findings of science and abandon those claims." He recognizes that the real world is not in opposition to theological and religious beliefs, but an actual reflection of those beliefs. Regardless of whether or not I, Paul Jackson, believe the world is round, it is still round. It took the Catholic Church until 1992 to apologize to Galileo for the treatment that shown to Galileo. Galileo, who dared to show that the reality of a sun-centered solar system disproved religious teaching. And that was in 1600 and something. Ah, and there's the problem. Don't mess with my teaching. Don't mess with my teaching and my religion, because that's a direct assault on my authority. And if you assault my authority, then the whole thing comes crashing down like a house of cards, doesn't it? Or it bends and breaks like an apple out on a limb falling to the ground. All right. So just, where is God in all of this? Well, I have a mental illustration that I want you all to join with me on. It's one that has helped me for many years find space for the divine, for the spirit that dwells within us and within and upon the earth and the living, growing things dependent upon it. So remember the classical model of the atom that you studied back in the day? Remember this? It has a nucleus made of tiny particles called protons and neutrons, and they are surrounded by other particles that orbit at great speed called electrons. Everybody with me? All right. Let's imagine, for our mental exercise, that our atom, our model of the atom, is the size of a football field, of a football stadium. Let's blow everything up to this relative size, shall we? All right. In that gigantic stadium, the nucleus, the protons and the neutrons at the center, would only be the size of a small marble sitting on the center of the 50-yard line. Okay? And the electrons would be orbiting around that marble on the track around the field. So you have this great big metal model in your mind, stadium, 50-yard line, marble smack in the middle of it, smaller marbles rolling very fast around the track. Here's my question. What's in all of that space between the marble on the 50-yard line and the little specks of electrons racing around the track? What's in all of that space? That's an awful lot of relative space. In fact, we are mostly space. Empty space? Well, it's not air. Air has molecules in it, right? It's got oxygen and carbon dioxide and nitrogen. So, what is in the space between a proton and its surrounding electrons? What's in the space? Science doesn't have an answer for that just yet. Lots of theories. Don't worry, I'm not going to go into them. My theology has found an explanation for that space, and it is one that gives me great peace and great joy. I think God lives in that space. It's that easy for me. That is where we can find the living God, in the space within all of the atoms that make up everything in our world. I think there is plenty of room in science for God, and I think there is plenty of room in God for science. I think in these empty spaces, there is room for more than we can ever know of. And I'm grateful for that. I always like going out on a limb every once in a while and hopefully getting a useful idea from the experience, especially if the limb holds and my theories don't come crashing down. But I'm also thankful for a God who chooses to reveal its nature through science. And I'm thankful for a brain that can see the real world and find a divine spark within it and within all of us. May that combined spark of God shine through the coming threatening darkness on our horizon and provide bright light that illuminates great truth. Amen. Please stand if you're able and sing our benediction. Go out into this cold day and breathe deep the molecules of air, knowing that there is plenty of space in them for the mysteries of God. Go and eat good food and know that in the molecules that you are taking into your body, there is more than enough room for God. Amen.